Could trouble in China's property sector bleed over to the United States? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. That's the warning from the Federal Reserve this week in its latest financial stability report. Policymakers there said due to the size of China's economy, financial system, and the nation's trade links with the rest of the world, stresses in China could pose a risk to global economic growth if investors grow more cautious. This week, troubled Chinese property giant Evergrande needs to make overdue interest payments totaling $148 million. Today, it announced it raised $145 million by selling its stake in the film and TV maker Hang Ten Networks Group. Rory Green is chief China economist at T.S. Lombard. He says, though, this method of raising cash just before a debt payment deadline is just a Band-Aid and not a permanent fix.
The scale of their liabilities, the amount of hidden debt on their balance sheets, these asset sales are delaying what is an almost inevitable failure of the company, and will not be sufficient to prevent severe financial distress from Evergrande.
There's been a lot of talk, though, that China doesn't want to see the company necessarily or the sector collapse completely. Is there anything that the government at this point is doing or more that it could do to step in and sort of smooth things over?
They certainly don't want the entire property sector to collapse. It's about 25% of Chinese GDP, and they are already easing restrictions on lending to the sector. Mortgage interest rates have been lowered across various cities in China, and banks also encouraged to lend to developers.
Evergrande is the company that we always talk about, but it's not the only company that's in this perilous situation there. Ratings firm Fitch today downgraded another company, Kaiser, because of its deteriorating situation. Now the Federal Reserve is keeping close tabs on what's happening in the property sector. So how big of a concern are these heavily indebted firms to international financial stability?
The spillovers from these firms to international financial stability are fairly modest, say, in context compared to the great financial crisis in the US. Their business is largely China-based, and their dollar debt is held by a sort of select few investors. But the thing to watch really is the growth contagion. Because the property sector is such a big part of China's economy, it is inevitably going to slow because of the funding conditions here. And that itself will have, I think, bigger ramifications beyond these bond defaults that we're seeing now.
And so you just mean it could weigh on global growth, essentially?
Absolutely, yeah. China is one of the three locomotives of the global economy, along with the US and in Europe. And with the property sector slowing, a large fall in property sector investment is inevitable, given the funding constraints now. China's growth next year is going to be slower, around 4.7% year over year versus trend growth of 6%, probably around 8% this year. So it's going to be slower, and that's bad for commodity exporters, bad for luxury goods producers that are selling to the Chinese middle class, and it's a drag on global growth.
Rory Green, chief China economist at T.S. Lombard, thanks for breaking this down for us this morning.
Thanks, Victoria.
Well, shares of Evergrande finished 0.8% higher at Hong Kong today. That's as the Hang Seng gained 0.2%, bucking broader declines across Asia. Checking some other numbers now, European benchmarks are mostly flat as they hover near record levels. To Australia now, where the government today has vowed to allocate $130 million to build thousands of electrical vehicle charging stations. But the move has been panned by critics, as the BBC's Phil Mercer reports.
Critics say the strategy lacks ambition and does nothing to improve affordability for electric cars that are more expensive than petrol or diesel models. Transport accounts for a fifth of Australia's emissions. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison says electric and hydrogen-powered vehicles are a key part of efforts to decarbonise its economy by 2050. There's a plan to build 50,000 home charging stations. Mr. Morrison insists that costs will come down as technologies improve.
That's the BBC's Phil Mercer reporting from Sydney there.
It's been months since the Taliban officially took control in Afghanistan, and global aid programs are warning the humanitarian disaster there is only getting worse. The World Food Program's executive director told the BBC 95% of people don't have access to enough food, and 23 million people are facing starvation. He said the next 6 months will be catastrophic. Thousands of people there are still desperate to find their way out of the country as poverty rates continue to climb. Human smugglers in the remote town of Zaranj near the border of Pakistan and Iran told the BBC's Sukunder Kamani their business has more than doubled since the Taliban takeover in August.
At a Taliban checkpoint on the edge of the city, open-backed pickup trucks crammed with passengers line up. Around 18 to 20 migrants are squashed against each other in each one, many with goggles and scarves wrapped round their faces to protect themselves from the wind and sand. There are no visas, no immigration, just people traffickers and a small fee to the Taliban.
What else can we do? There's no work. I used to be a teacher in Kabul. My school was open, but we weren't getting our salary. The government hasn't paid us for 3 months. We had no choice. What will my children eat?
The pickup trucks just keep coming. We must have seen around 50, and we haven't even been here an hour. From here, they'll travel through the desert. It's a seven-hour journey to Pakistan. Then they'll be smuggled on into Iran. Most of those leaving are men hoping to provide for families back home. But there are women and young children here too. Many of the migrants previously had government jobs. With the economic collapse and freezing of international funds, unemployment is shooting up. The Taliban have set limits on how many passengers can travel in a vehicle and charge each truck a $10 road tax. But they say the flow of people is unstoppable.
We've been monitoring these different parts of the route, and what we can see in each of those different locations is an increase in the infrastructure to support those journeys.
Dr. David Mansfield is an expert in cross-border economies and has been researching smuggling in this part of Afghanistan for years. He says the numbers fleeing now are even higher than during the migration crisis 6 years ago.
2014-2015 was really the heyday for many of these people smugglers. This is the time they remember as being very good for business. And in those days, it was 200 to 250 pickups a day that would be leaving. I mean, certainly in recent weeks, this is twice that. But all the indicators are this is going to be a very tough winter. I think we're going to see a lot more people leaving. And when we combine it with those who have already left, I think there is going to be a large number of people en route to Europe.
At the legal border crossing with Iran, hundreds of Afghans are deported back every day. Those who can't afford to pay traffickers try their luck, scaling a large wall dividing the countries. This man managed to get over it last night, but was detained shortly after. He's been sent back, but says tonight he'll be trying again. What else can I do, he asks.
That's the BBC's Sukunder Kamani reporting from Afghanistan's border there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.